Welcome to Clarity Fund Podcast. I'm Dr. Owen Anderson, and this is episode 11. I'm continuing with Dr. Burton. Thanks for joining us again.
Thanks for having me.
We're continuing in our series on mentoring young philosophers, and we've been especially thinking about what we've gone through, the kind of things we've encountered, because we've both spent our careers as students and professionally in the secular academy. Last time we were talking about the love of wisdom, and we got to this idea of the examined life. This is, I would say this is the application of philosophy. So if the love of wisdom is the attitude that a philosopher has, the application of philosophy is that you're leading the examined life. And it comes with this saying, the unexamined life is not worth living. I've heard people contest that and say, well, why have to be so harsh?
Yeah.
Let's just say the unexamined life is really nice, but there's lots of lives, or the examined life is really nice, but there's lots of lives that are nice. I want to talk about that. Like, what does that mean to say the unexamined life is not worth living?
Yeah, I once had a person tell me that was insulting to say the unexamined life is not worth living because you're saying some lives are not worthy.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's what that means,
right? I don't think it means that. And I also don't think it means if you're not leading the examined life, go out and do something, some harm to yourself. Of course not. But I think it means something like is less than human existence.
Yeah. And what is human existence? I mean, at the most fundamental level, we're rational beings. So we should, that's what makes us special. We should be using it, right?
Yeah. I think that's where the is and the ought, this is a problem in philosophy sometimes. And so this will illustrate how I would answer that problem. The is and the ought merge. You are a human and you ought to be a human. So you are a rational being and you ought to be a rational being. And so I think it's a contrast with the other kinds of things, right? There's minerals, vegetables, and animals, and humans.
Yes.
And the minerals don't lead the examined life, and the vegetables don't lead the examined life. Now, vegetables are a little further along the line than minerals. Minerals do grow, crystals can grow, but they don't reproduce.
Right.
So vegetables both grow and make more vegetables, but that's about it. And animals are a little further along, they have more senses, so they grow and they reproduce and they have lots of senses. But none of those is yet using reason to understand things.
Right. And going back to this is ought question, it does seem like if we're rational beings, there is a kind of ethics involved with that, an ethics of belief, because we use our reason to form beliefs. And if we form beliefs that are false, we could harm ourselves and others. So there's kind of an ethical component to being a rational being.
Yeah, good. There's consequences that come out, and our behavior is predicated on our beliefs.
Yes.
So our beliefs do lead to consequences, but there's also just the fact that I want, even if I didn't have any behavior, I just want to know true things. That's almost like built into what true means. Like,
yes.
I just want to know those things. And the reason is because it gives meaning
to life. And we need meaning.
Yeah, so the other alternative is that I lead the examined life and my life is meaningless. And so that's like saying, if you want to put it differently, I say, well, it's harsh to say the unexamined life is not worth living. You could say the unexamined life is more like a vegetable. So by not living the examined life, you're saying, I'd like to be a vegetable. And I don't know many people who sign on to that. They might at first, because they might think a vegetable gets to lounge around all day and play video games. But that's a couch potato.
Yeah.
And I think we have to learn in diets that potatoes aren't vegetables. Right? Someone says, I like to have vegetables, and they're just eating french fries. You say, no. Vegetable means things like cucumbers and green peppers and all those sort of things, right?
Kale.
Leafy greens. Yeah, kale. It doesn't mean a potato. So a couch potato who plays video games is not the same yet as a vegetable. Because what's interesting about a video game is that people want to, they're interesting because you get to explore and learn things.
Yeah, I think playing video games could be an intellectual activity, right?
Yeah. You precisely because of that, the richer the game is, the more people enjoy it because they can understand more things. So that's not a good example of the unexamined life simpliciter. You're still doing a human activity. So the unexamined life is not worth living. I'd like to propose one way
this
could come out, which is in self-examination. Do I know anything?
Yes.
Because if I was leading the examined life, I would know basic things. And I think that's a point that might surprise some people. They might think, I lead the examined life, but since no one can know anything, I don't know anything either.
Well, if you're leading the examined life, did you just stop there? Or are you continuing? Like, oh, I can't know anything. period, or is that like the end of examination?
Yeah, you need to keep going, and you're examining for a purpose. So if there are basic questions, which you and I talked about in a previous episode, they're basic because those are the starting point, and you can know the answers.
Right.
So if you're leading the exam in life, you should know what is eternal, for example. That's the very first question.
Yes.
Even Plato says that. That's where everything begins. What has existed from eternity? And so do you know the answer to that? Or you might say, I didn't even know that was a question. And my quick answer is the material universe has always existed.
Yeah, it does seem like if you're doing philosophy at all, that's where philosophy historically begins and conceptually begins. What is ultimate reality like? What is the cause of all things? And it can't be changeable. It has to be unchangeable. So the exam in life has to go there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I asked you this about wisdom and the good. I want to ask you this about what is eternal also. Did you ever have any classes that focused that question? What is eternal?
No, not at all. They all assumed something. We never argued for the assumptions. We never tried to prove what is eternal. I think probably all of my classes assumed the material world is all that exists, and that's all we said about it.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think so. The idea I encountered was that this is a question ancient people thought about, but modern people are smarter, and we know that we can't answer it, and so we just focus on the immediate experience of our lives.
Yes.
Now, I think that's a complete misrepresentation of ancient and modern, but that was kind of the attitude was, well, now we know we can't figure that one out, so we're just going to focus on my immediate experience, which is what you still find the ancient philosophers debating also. That was the Epicureans and the Stoics. So we find people still just arguing about the same thing, what's a pleasurable life, and not interested in what is eternal. And that's where in Acts 17, the Apostle Paul begins with this unknown God.
Yes.
And draws them back to that question of what has existed from eternity.
Right. I can remember one class, one time, we were studying postmodernism, and it led to, I think it was Levinas, and my professor brought up the question about God. Can we consider the existence of God? And it was almost like a forbidden question, and it was a side discussion, like, that'd be really cool if we can discuss this, right? But we can't.
Yeah.
Because I think the reading was kind of leading us to that question. Is there something that has existed from eternity?
Yeah.
But it was almost a subversive question.
Yeah, that's interesting that this one, and the idea, the alternative seems to be something like this. More like we live out of the flow of our experience. And in my experience, I never encounter the eternal. And since all I know is my experience and all you know is your experience, we don't ever come to that. So it's a certain kind of individual empiricism. And it doesn't get to being.
Yes.
And being itself is a kind of mysterious thing that we don't need because what we need is just our experience. How do I have pleasurable experiences and how do I avoid unpleasurable experiences? And so we don't need to get to being for that, according to this view.
Okay, that's kind of getting us back to the exam in life. Isn't that what animal existence is like?
Yeah, right. So now that's good. Yeah, I was at the vegetable earlier. Now we've graduated up to the animal level, and we're just living out of the flow of our experience. And we're still at the less than human existence. There's a reason why philosophers began to wonder about what's eternal and how to get to being. It's because experience just gives us, at best, the appearance of things and doesn't get us to reality. And what we want is reality. We want to know what is real.
Yes. And okay, so that's interesting. Why do philosophers have this drive to understand reality when we could just, I don't know, be content with animal existence? Why not just stay there?
Yeah. So it could be, well, it's a nice indoor job without a lot of heavy lifting, or it's kind of fun to talk about ideas. Like, some people like to do crosswords. Some people play tennis. I talk about ideas. So it could be some of those kind of personal issues.
I don't know. Socrates' life doesn't seem like it was just this easy thing. I mean, he did die for it. I mean, it was a real
That's going
pursuit
a little bit. That's
him.
Extreme, though. Socrates was kind of extreme. We don't want to go there.
Well,
let's just enjoy talking about ideas, not get in trouble.
Okay.
But I'm wondering if this whole approach that we're talking about will get you into trouble in the exact same way it did for Socrates, which is, for this reason, if you confess you're not leading the examined life, the implication is those who claim to be able to teach you also aren't leading the examined life. And then that could become uncomfortable.
Right. When that's pointed out, then people want to defend their position, defend themselves, defend their way of life.
I think this one question brings that out in a fascinating way. Do you know what is eternal? And when you ask somebody that, their answer tells you so much about them, because they might immediately say, no one can know that. Right? And that tells you so much about their skepticism. Or they might say, well, yeah, the material universe has existed from eternity. And that tells you so much right there about how much they've thought through this.
What if they say God is eternal?
Yeah, they might. I saw a materialist one time, Richard Dawkins, most people know him.
Yeah.
And he said, if anyone asks you where the universe came from, you say, where did God come from?
Oh, yeah.
And it was meant to be a kind of mind bomb, like, wow, I never thought of that. Yeah, maybe God came from somewhere. But of course, what we're getting at is that something has existed without beginning, and it can't be in the material universe for reasons we could give, so it must be something else. So it's not actually a mind bomb to say, where did the eternal come from? Well, it didn't come from anywhere. It existed from eternity.
Yeah. I hate that question.
Well, just for that reason, right?
Yeah.
Someone could say, well, I hate that question because it caught me. He exposed me. That's not what happens at all. What happens is, I guess Richard Dawkins doesn't understand what eternal means.
Yes.
Without beginning.
Yes. That's why I hate the question. It's almost as like, you haven't really even thought about what people who claim to believe in God actually believe.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Maybe that's what I want. I think when I hear him talk about God, I'm thinking he mostly means like polytheism. Like,
right.
Well, where'd Zeus come from? And there is an answer to that. Yeah, Zeus had parents. You're right.
Right.
But that's not what people, once we get to the theistic religions, that's not what we're talking about anymore.
Yeah.
So the unexamined life can be brought out simply by that question. What do you think is eternal? To see if you're pursuing knowledge, you would know what's eternal.
Yes.
By what age? You think by 12 you can know what's eternal?
Of course, I think so.
So a young teenager or a late child could know only some things are eternal.
Yes.
And I don't just mean repeating what their parents said. That would occur to them as a question. They'd wonder, where did things come from?
Yes.
That's a normal. I mean, kids love that question. Where did this come from? Where did that come from? So it naturally occurs to kids, where did the universe come from?
Yes. Where did everything come from?
So if we get into college and we haven't yet answered that, it sounds like something's not been working.
Yes. And it may be what's not working is we asked that question, we didn't come up with the answer, and those around us didn't come up with an answer. Maybe they pushed the question into the future some more.
Yeah, or they told us an answer that it was fideism.
Right.
Just believe this. Because someone could say God is the answer in a fideistic way.
Yes.
And so that doesn't help anybody. So it might be something like that. But I'm suggesting, it's kind of drifting us back to defining knowledge, because I'm suggesting you could know what's eternal at a relatively young age. And by know, I mean understand.
Yes.
I think the word understand, it brings with it the idea that you could show what you claim to understand. If someone says they understand something and they can't show you, like if they say, I understand how cars work, and then you bring them a car and they don't know how to show you what they claim to understand, then you say, you don't really understand it.
Right.
So sometimes knowledge, people try to get out of that with the word knowledge, right? They'll say, well, I know about things, but I can't really show you. And I think understanding doesn't give us that same wiggle room.
Right. So we're saying the examined life would lead you to know what is eternal. We could know what is eternal when we're young. If we don't know what is eternal, what are the implications then?
Yeah, I wonder, as part of knowing yourself, if you've accepted perhaps a kind of either skepticism or fideism.
I think so.
Now, you might remember Carl Sagan's Cosmos, and he begins it with saying the cosmos is all there ever is, was, or will be.
Right.
And in one way, I appreciate that, because from the very beginning, he just gets right to the point and says, here's what I think is eternal. Now, he's mimicking, I think, a catechism question, which says, where we come from, what are we, where we come from, and where are we going?
Yeah.
And Paul Gauguin also had a painting about that. And so I think there's some overlap there. They're seeing that same question. What are we? Well, it's just the cosmos. Where we come from, the cosmos. Where we go, in the cosmos. That's all there is. Matter, the material universe. And so there, okay, is that true? Is it just the material universe? That's one statement of it. And why not that? Why will we say God? But I think that's comprehensible right away when we're very young.
Yes.
And that's why he starts there. I mean, that's, I bring that up because that was his book to try to teach younger students, maybe high school level students, physics, his view of the universe.
Right.
So right away, okay, here's all that exists. So I think we can understand that. And what's happened if we haven't? Well, we might have accepted a kind of skepticism, or we might have accepted a view but not been able to prove it. So we might have just been told God, or we might have been told the cosmos, and we don't really have any proof.
All right, let's say we're giving advice to young people. Let's say we're at that point now where we realize, wow, I want to start living the examined life, and I do see that I have just accepted answers that I'm not really sure I have arguments for. And what would be the next step in the examined life if you realize that?
Well, that's right. That's good. I think that gets us to philosophy as the critical use of reason.
Mm.
Philosophy is we've been talking about philosophy as an area, as an attitude, as an application. And so I wanted to especially save philosophy as a method. What does philosophy do different than other disciplines? What is our method? So, for example, we don't do, in philosophy, it's not a social science, right? You go around right. and get statistics. It's not a hard science. You're not measuring how fast bodies fall. But what you are doing is you're critically using reason to question assumptions.
Yes.
And reason is the laws of thought. So there's reasoning,
mm-hmm.
how a person thinks. That's different. People may think fallaciously. They may reason by using fallacies. But here we're talking about reason in yes. itself, what it is when we describe it, the laws of thought, that which describes and makes thought possible. So if I'm thinking, I'm using reason. And if I'm not using reason, whatever else I'm doing, I'm not thinking anymore. And so I bring that up because we can apply that then to answers to what is eternal.
Yes.
If I say matter has existed from eternity, do I end up contradicting myself by saying something like, what is not, what is temporal has existed from eternity? So that's what I would say the method is. And so if someone's been going along and they say, oh, I haven't been leading the examined life, what should I start doing? Well, let's just start using reason.
Yes. I like what you brought up about contradiction. So we can take the method and apply it to our own views as we're doing self-examination and see, have I contradicted myself somewhere, or do the beliefs that I hold contradict themselves? And reason is the tool that points out contradictions. And we're assuming contradictions are bad. Mm-hmm. They're meaningless. And so do I have a position that when I critically analyze it, it's meaningless? And if so, then what should I do?
Yeah.
Change?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thread I wanted to follow, was leading to meaning.
Hmm.
And if there's anything, maybe there's a few ways to summarize the advice we're giving, but how about this? Pursue meaning.
Yes.
The alternative is what is less than human existence. It's not that vegetables are meaningless. They just don't even rise the level of understanding and having meaning. And animals don't have understanding. You can see animals doing very sophisticated things, but you couldn't get them to write an essay and show how they understand what they've been doing.
Yeah.
They're operating out of intuition or instinct. So as humans, we want meaning. And you can think about what life is like if you think it's meaningless.
Yes. Think about lacking understanding. I remember a geometry class I took once when I was in high school. I didn't understand it at the beginning, so the rest of it didn't mean anything to me. I couldn't make sense of it. And it was very uncomfortable. What if all of life is like that? You just can't make sense of it.
Yeah, I had the exact same experience in physics. First week of physics class, this is freshman level, so very young in college, and the professor keeps talking about vectors. And I had no idea what this word meant. And for some reason, this is part of my advice. Look it up. I could have done it sooner. I don't know why it took me a week to look up the word. But he had these lectures going over what vectors are, and he didn't define them in class. And yeah, it was meaningless. I didn't know what was going on. And I had to look it up. And once I had meaning, once I did look it up, then everything would fit into place. Like, oh, okay. And life is like that. I think when life is meaningless, people begin to do some pretty excessive things to try to make life seem meaningful again.
Right.
And that emptiness is unbearable.
Right. I think that was the thing about fear we were talking about. We fear that kind of life where things don't make sense. The dots aren't connected. And the dots are little pieces of meaning. And when we connect all the pieces of knowledge that we have, we can get a bigger picture. And that's understanding. And yeah, that's what we want, I think. That's what I want.
Yeah, they say it doesn't make sense. And it can't make sense. That second part.
Yeah.
If you said life doesn't make sense and it can't make sense, then you'd be done. I mean, imagine that. People really like to watch mystery movies.
Yes.
But the idea is it doesn't currently make sense, but it's going to. And we love that part where it all fits into place, where the detective Poirot gets everyone in the same room and he explains the mystery to everyone. And we think, yes, all right, he figured it out and I could figure it out too. But what if you're told from the beginning of a movie, this doesn't currently make sense to you and it never will?
That would be awful.
Yeah, it's just a cacophony of sights and sounds that don't fit together or have any purpose.
You know, this is funny because it makes me think that philosophers are like the detectives of the bigger questions.
Yeah.
We want to make sense of everything. And maybe that's why we went into interdisciplinary studies, is because there are these other parts that we want to put together to see the whole.
Yeah, that's what we get into, philosophy as a system.
Yes.
Philosophy in all areas of life. Philosophy of literature, philosophy of history, philosophy of religion. So I think that attracted us both to all the different fields where we can apply these things.
Yes.
But the idea of there being meaning, making in two senses, making sense and also having a purpose. Those are slightly different, but they are not unrelated. So sometimes people might think of meaning just as having a purpose. Like, what's the meaning of this microphone? Well, it records things. That's its purpose. But behind that, or before that, is you'd have to be able to make sense of things, to understand things, to then understand what their purpose is.
Yes.
So philosophy as aimed at, we can have knowledge, we can understand, and how important that's been for us. And if you have that, doesn't that connect the other things we've taught about? You'd love that.
Yes.
The love of wisdom. You'd have that attitude, well, I want to examine myself because what if I don't have it?
Yes.
So it fits all those things back into one coherent whole.
Right. And that's why we need others, so that we can... Sometimes it's hard alone to examine your own views, but when you put it out there for others to critique, then you start to see, oh, maybe I didn't know where I thought I knew.
Yeah. Well, and then you begin to... That's almost like a starting point for critiquing some of these views. So if all that exists is the cosmos, going back to that view, then there really isn't any purpose or meaning. And
right.
So that's not a tight argument yet, but it's a kind of thing that strikes you where you then begin to pursue the tighter argument to say, well, wait a minute, if I'm just a random collection of atoms that came together by accident and then it will be dispelled into the void, what's the point of anything?
Yeah,
you begin to say, I need to pursue this thread out. And that's kind of like you were saying, the detective mystery. Like, I need to follow this thread out and see where this goes.
Yes. And he starts cosmos that way. But does anyone ever go, wait a minute, why should we start there? I mean, we have to learn to ask that why question when we see the assumption. Why? Yeah. What's your argument?
Yeah. He just starts off. I think, again, he's probably somewhat making fun of that same catechism question that Paul Gauguin is in his pain. He's also kind of twisting that answer. Life is miserable and painful. So here he's starting out the same thing. He's just making a declaration. But you're right, that's a good place for us as we conclude to say, well, it's one thing to make a declaration, and he might be kind of saying, I'm doing this as a scientist. As a scientist, I found out that only the cosmos exists. Like, I looked all through the cosmos and there's only cosmos. So therefore only the cosmos exists. But how do you know? Like, you're relying on your senses, which begs the question.
Yeah, you know, this brings us back to philosophy as a system, which may be something we explore in the future, but you start somewhere and then you build a whole system upon that starting point. But if we were using reason again, we would use it to examine that starting point and argue for it and prove it.
Yeah. I think for both of us, we've talked about the fixed points we had that helped us get through and continue to flourish in the secular academy. I think reason was one of those fixed points.
Definitely.
And if we didn't have that in place, reason as the laws of thought, if we didn't have that in place and then using that to then answer questions like what is real, what is good, I'm not sure we would have ended up in the same way we did.
I agree. Reason is definitely the number one fixed point. And I tell my students, this is a hill I'm ready to die on.
Yeah. Well, if you abandon the laws of thought, there, you can't coherently go on to argue for anything else.
Right.
So thanks for joining us, Dr. Burton.
Thank you.
And we'll continue in our series on mentoring young philosophers. Thank you out there for joining us at Clarity Fund Podcast.
Take care.